This is PCJ Radio International.
On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Hello and welcome to the program. Coming up today, we'll be joined by Jeff White, who'll talk about the media spectrum in Tunisia, where he was this past February attending the HFCC conference. And then, do you feel depressed? Misled? Is your hair falling out? Well, Swiss novelist and writer Rolf de Belli has a cure. Stay away from news. We have this and more, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus. And now a warning. Turn off CNN and go watch the Golf Channel. One of the most exciting regions for radio and television is the Middle East. Ever since the Jasmine Revolution, stations of all kinds have been popping up like mushrooms. Jeff White was in Tunisia in February for the HFCC conference. He now brings us a look and listen to what he heard there.
The television offerings in our room at the hotel were a bit limited. The only English language channel was CNN International, which allowed us to keep up with world news. There was one channel in French, and the other five channels were in Arabic. Most of them seemed to be local, but one of them was Al Jazeera in Arabic from Qatar. As for radio reception, the AM band seemed to be dead, but I noted at least 26 FM stations, most of them in Arabic, but some in French. Besides Arabic music and Quran prayers, there was a fair amount of French and English language music, and I was surprised to hear a certain amount of Spanish language music from Latin America as well. The most interesting local station for foreigners is RTCI, Radio Tunis's international channel, which airs programming in Arabic and French, as well as various news bulletins and some longer programs each day in English, Spanish, and German.
And I thank you for listening to the English language program on RTC. And to me, today, the headlines in French with Sarah Rache are next, and the German language program as well. Stay tuned, and goodbye from Tunis. Bye.
Tunis International Radio, English program.
Despite its name, RTCI is not really an external service. It's on a network of FM channels throughout the country, including 98.2 MHz in Tunis. It can be listened to abroad via internet. The Tunisian National Radio does have a shortwave service, but it transmits only in Arabic, beamed to Europe, the Middle East, and the Maghreb area of North Africa. They use a 500-kilowatt transmitter located in the city of Sfax in east-central Tunisia. I spoke to the engineers from ONT, the National Telecommunications Office of Tunisia, who were at the HFCC conference. They explained to me that ONT provides the transmission facilities for all radio stations in Tunisia, both government and privately owned. Right next door in Libya, just east of Tunisia, the national radio station ended its shortwave broadcasts 2 years ago during the civil war there, the engineers told me. But they're back on the air now, with Arabic programming only, although they told us that they will add English and French language programs in the future, beamed to Africa. They say they have two 500-kilowatt transmitters and a rotatable antenna. Reports indicate that the service is currently sporadic. On the west side of Libya is Algeria. Like Tunisia, the government-owned radio station operates a so-called international channel, Radio Algeria International, which is not on shortwave, but is on FM in Algiers. It can be heard internationally on the Internet.
Radio Algeria International brings you up to date with the latest news around the globe. Politics, economy, weather, and other factual outputs are streaming out every day on both FM and satellite frequencies. For any queries or suggestions, send us your mail to www.algerian-radio.dz.
The Algerian radio does have a service on shortwave using the facilities of TDF, Télédiffusion de France, in Issoudun. But this appears to be temporary, as engineer Lotfi Khalali of Algeria's TDA explained to us that they are building two shortwave transmitter sites in Ourgla and Bekaa, each with a 300 kilowatt DRM capable transmitter. These sites are expected to be on the air within the next year. The programming is intended for the countries of the Sahel in northwestern Africa, Mali, Niger, Nigeria, Mauritania, Chad, and the Polisario Front areas. Over in northeastern Africa is the Sudan Broadcasting Corporation. A representative of the SBC at the HFCC conference told me they have shortwave broadcasts daily from 0300 to 2200 UTC on 7200 kHz in Arabic, beamed 205 degrees from Omdurman. And on 9505 kHz, they have English-language programs in the mornings from 0400 to 1000 UTC at 110 degrees azimuth, and in the evenings from 16 to 2000 UTC at 210 degrees azimuth. They plan to add new equipment in the near future and expand to up to six frequencies, they told us. Unfortunately, I was not able to hear any of these transmissions when I tried at our location in suburban Tunis. But from my hotel balcony, I was able to hear another Middle Eastern station on shortwave with a very good signal. One of the strongest signals on shortwave at 2:35 p.m. here in Tunis, which would be 1335 UTC, on 17705 kHz is Riyadh from Saudi Arabia with 500 kilowatts. After the close of the HFCC conference on February 1st, about half of the delegates took part in a sightseeing tour offered by the ASBU. The first stops were at some of the sites of the ancient Roman ruins of Carthage in the Tunis suburbs. Back at the hotel that evening, I switched on my radio on the balcony overlooking the Mediterranean. I was amazed to find programming from China Radio International in various languages all over the shortwave dial. I thought maybe my shortwave receiver had spur problems with so many frequencies occupied by China throughout the evening. But Ventsislav Gergiev of Spaceline confirmed to me that this is normal in North Africa and Europe, at a time when many Western shortwave stations are reducing or eliminating their shortwave services, China Radio International is increasing them and seems to be the easiest station to hear on the bands. No wonder, then, that the Chinese delegation was the largest at the HFCC conference in Tunis. For them, shortwave is alive and well.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Swiss writer Rolf Debelli says that watching news will mislead you, create stress, and bring down your libido. He says that while we should not pay attention to what happens on the other side of the world, he also says we do still need to stay engaged with the world. Richard Ady spoke to Rolf Debelli from his home in Switzerland and asked him just how news misleads people and messes with their brains.
Well, it does not intentionally mislead, but it misleads in the brains of people because the bright, personalized, scandalous news, they take our attention as readers, as listeners, as watchers, and the small developments, the slow developments, the developments you can't put into pictures, we don't take these as attentively, and that's just how our brain functions. And if our brain functions that way, that means we tend to overestimate the risks and the probabilities of scandalous things like terrorist attacks.
Well, yes, and of course that's much in the news right now.
Exactly, and that's and if you look at the probability, how often does this happen? Okay, so a couple of people died. You know how many people die out of, let's say, obesity in the U.S.? About 3,000 every week. So that's way more than terrorist attacks. And these are risks we don't talk much about, or resistance to antibiotics. We don't talk about this much. For example, after September 11, there's a great study that came out. 3,000 people died at September 11 in the terrorist attacks. Then people switched over to driving cars because they were afraid of flying airplanes. And in that half year afterwards, an additional 1,600 people died just because of this, just because of that impact. Because people were afraid, because of the news, because it was scandalous, because it was bright and colorful, and you can put it in a lot of pictures. So I'm not saying news misleads actively, but it does so in our brain.
All right, we're insufficiently rational to deal with news. What about your next point, that news is irrelevant?
Well, it is. If you ask yourself the question, how many news pieces do I consume every day? And an average person consumes, conservatively counted, about 30 pieces of news a day. You know, that's you watch the news in the morning, a little bit during lunch, you surf a little bit in the afternoon, then you watch it probably on TV in the evening. Let's say 30 pieces of news times about 300 days. So that gives you about 10,000 news pieces in 12 months. Out of these 12,000 news pieces, or 10,000 news pieces, I ask people often, tell me one that has allowed you to make a better decision for your life, for your business, personal life, business, whatever, as opposed to not having that piece of news. And many people have a very hard time coming up with an answer.
Another thing that you are concerned about with news is, you say, and this is a big claim, I think, that news is toxic to your body. What do you mean by that?
That's a very simple stress reaction. We are nothing but hunter-gatherers in modern clothes. So if you get attacked by a lion, for example, you run away, you have a stress reaction in your body, which means glucocorticoids, stress hormones, are in your body, which direct all the blood and the blood sugar to your muscles. So you run away, and after 15 minutes, that system regains balance again. So So during that stress reaction, these 15 minutes, all the long-term building projects of your body go down. So your cell repair goes down, you don't have hair growth, digestion goes down because you don't need it to survive in these 15 minutes. Sexual drive goes down. You just that all the long-term building projects are delayed. And then after 15 minutes, when you're in safety, they resume. Now, if you have chronic stress, let's say you have a boss you hate for years, or you're in a relationship that you hate for years, then you have chronic stress, or you have financial troubles for years, then all the chronic stress doesn't resume, it goes on. So you have stomach problems, you get ulcers, your sexual drive goes down, cell repair goes down, you age faster. And the same thing happens when you consume news constantly. You are triggered, glucocorticoids in your system, and that just has this effect on your body. You age a little bit faster than when you don't consume news.
So stories from that are perhaps, you know, on the other side of the world to me, but are upsetting, that's stressful. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. And that's what really sets us apart from monkeys. You know, we can think of something really bad on the other side of the world and get stressed about it. And that's really what our brain, our neocortex, does to us. And that's why it's much healthier to stay away from news. You know, bad things probably happen on other planets too. And we don't hear about those, and we're totally okay with not hearing about those things.
You say that news inhibits thinking, but surely being told about something you didn't know makes you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely, but news works in a really sneaky way. And news, because it's driven by advertising for a large degree, needs to take your attention away and puts it to the media and where you try to sell advertising, be it in the radio, TV, or in print, or online. This wouldn't be the case if it weren't advertising-driven, but the business model, for the most part, is advertising-driven. So news intentionally wants to take your attention away from whatever you're doing right now and put it to the story or actually the ad next to it. That's just how it works, and this only works by interrupting your thinking process. So I see a lot of people, and this happened to me too when I still consumed news, I read something, I think about something hard, then it becomes harder and harder, and eventually I'll just make the easy thing, I'll go check my news online, and boom, my thinking process has been disrupted. And that's how news works. And I just don't want that danger in my life. If I have something hard to think about, I want to think about it until the end.
Yes. I've spent the last 25 years in journalism, and that whole time I've been a big news consumer. And are you telling me that I've wasted a quarter of a century?
Well, have you wasted a quarter of a century? Well, I would say if it gave you pleasure and it gave you a good income, then probably not. But for me, I've realized I'm much more productive and I have much better idea and my life is much calmer without the news. That's all I'm saying. And again, the first 3 weeks were very hard and then I did it. And since then, I haven't consumed news. So I would recommend it to everybody.
You actually differentiate between news and journalism, don't you? Because you're not opposed to, or you're not enormously critical of all forms of journalism. It's news that you have the issues with.
Yes, correct. It's that breaking news that, okay, a bomb went off there and there. It's that type of news that is completely useless to me and to many people. I'm not opposed to journalism at all. We need journalism in a democracy. Investigative journalism is extremely important. And also, opinions are extremely important of people, of journalists who have spent a lot of time on a specific subject. But that can't come in the form of 200-word pieces of short snippets. That has to come in longer forms. And that's why I really enjoy longer forms. They have much more value to me. Pieces that are 5 pages, 10 pages, and of course then books, which are 300-piece articles. They have the possibility to explain the world. See, news is like a flickering on the surface. But what I'd like to understand is how those events come about. I'd like to understand the generators of these events. And to explain the generators of these events, you need longer pieces than these short little snippets.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 ident and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxr.ca internet website. That's dxer.ca. Good listening, everyone.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdene Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, switzerlandinsound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, switzerlandinsound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I would like you to join me for a very eclectic and different kind of radio show. It's called the Stuff File Program. Where else would you get to hear a well-renowned Hollywood acting teacher, a best-selling science fiction writer, a guy who teaches llamas how to be golf caddies, or the man who has Hitler's toilet, all wrapped up with some of the oddest news stories around? It's a rhetorical question. There's only one place. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. There are various ways to catch the show. You can find it at my website at peteranthonyholder.com. Check out my blog at peteranthonyholder.blogspot.com. Find it at cyberstationusa.com, radioforall.net, or simply subscribe to it on iTunes. You've forgotten all those places already, haven't you? Okay, just Google the title. It's called the Stuff File Program, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. Catch it, enjoy it, and have a chuckle or two. The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Radio will never be the same again.
Now time to find out what we can expect in propagation. Here's Dan Hensley.
Here's the propagation forecast from April 27th to May 3rd, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts out on April 27th and 28th at 110, up 5 points to 115 on April 29th and 30th. May 1st, up 5 more points to 120, up 5 more points to 125 on May 2nd and 3rd. The A index is stable all week long at 5 from April 27th to May 3rd, and the KP index also stable all week at 2. Sunspot AR1726 has developed a Delta-class magnetic field that harbors energy for strong eruptions. This has prompted NOAA forecasters to have a greater expectation of M-class flares to 40% and X-class flares to 15% within the period of time between April 23rd and 24th. Because of the sunspot's almost central location on the solar disk, any eruptions in that time would have been likely Earth-directed. AR1726 is more than a dozen times wider than Earth, which makes it an easy target for backyard solar telescopes. Sunspot 1723 is passing out of view this week. 1726 and 27 are in view. With 1726 being so large and unstable, we should expect more activity such as continuing flares and noisy band conditions. A photo of 1726 shows us planet-sized dark cores with smaller granules surrounding it, and those granules mean lots of massive boiling on a titanic scale. Two coronal holes are sending a solar wind hurling towards Earth, and this means disruptions to the bands. All of this indicates bad news for propagation this week. On April 20th, we received a propagation report from Michael Stevenson in Eastern Australia. He said, from 0330 UTC on bands between 31 to 16 meters, many, many signals were heard, some extremely strong, just like the old days. Have not heard such wonderful shortwave reception for at least 12 months or longer. Could not log and report all that was heard. You can see Mr. Stevens' frequency log at the PCJ Media Facebook page.
Thanks, Dan. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you'd like to listen to it again or past editions of the program, you can download the podcast at www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. We always love hearing from you, so please drop us a line anytime at mnp@pcjmedia.com and let us know what's on your mind. That email address again is MNP, stands for Media Network Plus, mnp@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of Dan Hensley and Keith Perron, this is Paulette McQuarrie saying so long and see you soon.